Welcome to this podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, exploring aspects of our life and witness at this time.
You're very welcome to this podcast from PCI, which on this occasion is aimed particularly at parents of teenagers, but will hopefully be of interest to anyone who wants to understand more about young people. I'm Graham Thompson, and I work as Youth Development Officer for the denomination, and I'm delighted to welcome three guests to our podcast. First of all, Carol, who is a teacher in a Belfast grammar school. Rob, a youth worker in a Presbyterian church in Bangor. And Caroline, who is a clinical psychologist working with children and young people. Thanks so much to each of you for coming in. We're looking forward to hearing what you bring to the conversation from your particular area of expertise. And also, each of us is a parent, and all apart from yourself, Rob, are parents of teenagers. Yours aren't quite there yet. So we each see things from more than one angle. But before we get into our conversation, we're so grateful to some young people from a church in Lisburn who told us a little bit about what life is like for them, their challenges and opportunities, and how their parents support them.
The hardest thing in my life right now is trying to find time to complete everything I want to do in one day, such as hockey, dance, or piano, and many other things.
I would honestly say balance is the biggest challenge. There's so much going on in my life at the minute. It's a really big year for me. So that's the biggest challenge, I would say. So
my biggest challenge is not letting the stress bother me from upcoming exams, as it is a big step from primary school to high school.
To be honest, it's probably school. I just started first year in September there, and it is quite a jump from primary school.
The biggest challenge in my life right now would have to be mental health and a lack of motivation.
Currently, after moving to high school, my greatest opportunity to learn a new sport. Currently, I'm learning to play hockey, and although I've never played before, my coaches are really helping me.
Yeah, just fitting in everything is, a bit of a challenge. And also through all of that, trying to make sure that I get my time with God and that I'm able to build that relationship with Him and continue in my faith is really important.
One of my most exciting opportunities is I have been given the chance to help teach and mentor little kids at my dance school after school on a Friday.
So I am a year 14 student doing A-levels. After my exams, hopefully I'll be going to university. That's quite exciting. It will be an area that I particularly want to really focus and home in on.
The greatest thing my parents for me do right now is drive me to everywhere I want to go.
I would say that my parents, I'm really lucky to say that they've always encouraged me. I'm fortunate to have parents that are quite honestly my biggest cheerleaders.
My parents help support me for school and make sure I have everything I need. And if I'm feeling a little down, they help me cheer me up.
I know it sounds a wee bit silly, but I think it's actually paying for food, for bills. My parents support me in most things I do, like in rugby and all the sports I do and loads of things. And I think that's really cool.
So my parents will always try their best to help me out, even if they don't necessarily understand what's going on, what I'm struggling with, or what my area of concern is actually over. But they will always try to listen and help me come up with a solution.
So it's great to hear a little bit of insight from what young people actually told us. But I want to ask each of you in turn to tell us what your experience of young people is and what you think is going on for them at the moment. Caroline, starting with you from your background of understanding young people from a psychological, emotional health point of view, what sorts of things do you think parents of teenagers need to understand about what their young people are experiencing emotionally and in terms of their mental well-being at this time?
I suppose I would just start by saying that I've been working with children and young people for about 13 years now, and I guess that, you know, emotional and psychological development always comes with its challenges, doesn't it? You know, you kind of have almost a trajectory of what normal development is meant to look like for kids and for young people. And even before the pandemic, there would have been certain times it would have been particularly difficult. For example, settling into school, making friends, making that transition from, you know, primary school to secondary school, hitting puberty. Lots of times that you could specifically point out and go, oh, those might be times that could be difficult for children and young people to navigate. And even pre-pandemic, I think rates of anxiety and depression and mental health difficulties were quite high in Northern Ireland. And there would be research that would suggest that as well, that, you know, even compared to England pre-pandemic, our young people struggled more for various reasons and maybe far too complex to get into just here. But I think one of the most helpful things to think about is that even before the pandemic happened, children and young people were finding it really difficult. And they're finding it difficult to get used to all of the physical changes in their bodies and all of the emotional changes that kind of came online with that too. I think to just know that the normal process has been disrupted is important. You know, and when the pandemic happened, then we had on top of what was already a difficult journey for children and young people, a whole set of new challenges and things that would have been quite predictable. For example, school became very unpredictable because they weren't going in anymore. And, you know, socialisation opportunities were greatly reduced because people just couldn't hang out the way that they used to. And mental health certainly has been impacted through the pandemic as well. So whilst there were young people who would have been anxious and depressed before, the rates are so much higher. And the complexity, I think, has grown through the pandemic as well. I think partly because the world suddenly doesn't feel as safe a place as it used to. You know, and I think to understand what children and young people have been going through, we sometimes have to just pause for a moment and think, well, what have we as adults and we as parents been through? Because actually, it gives us a really good insight. Because with our adult brains, we're kind of more easily able to make sense of everything that's been happening. But if you imagine what that's like for a child or an adolescent, that's incredibly difficult to understand how your world, which maybe seemed relatively safe, isn't anymore.
Do you think young people are hiding that because they maybe on the surface are, you know, presenting that things are normal, but do you think a lot of them under the surface maybe have a lot more going on there?
Yeah, it's funny because I tend, and in work as well, I would tend to try to help parents think about what their own response to stress or overwhelming situations is, because I think what we tend to do is one thing or the other. We tend to either completely, you know, almost avoid it and withdraw it into ourselves, and therefore some of us will already be able to say, oh yeah, my child does that. My child sort of suppresses how they're feeling, or they don't want to talk about it. I ask them if they're fine because I know they're not fine, but they don't tell me. So one response under stress, and we do this as adults as well sometimes, is just to avoid and to not want to, you know, talk to people about it or go to people. And I suppose the other response sometimes is to become very overwhelmed by the emotion and react really strongly to the negative emotion that's around. And again, some of us might be thinking about our children and going, yes, actually, that's what they do. They become really upset or really obviously struggle. And what I would say is sometimes it's the quieter, more withdrawn ones that we miss. Or maybe as parents, we find it really difficult to even accept that our children might be struggling or that they might need extra help or extra support. And what we want really is a balance between the two, is being able to move towards someone to get the support when we need it and to not feel like we have to hide. Because I think sometimes children and adolescents also hide things from us as parents because maybe they think we won't be able to cope with the reality or their reality as well. But I think to sort of understand that there's, generally speaking, two different ways of reacting can really help us come online in terms of what we maybe need to try and do as a parent to help.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. In a school context, Carol, to jump over to you again, from the outside, it kind of looks like school life is back to normal. But what sort of things are you seeing as a teacher, as a form tutor, you know, in the roles that you have in school? What are you seeing in young people this year?
I think one of the big things that I'm noticing with all year groups is this is a fear of what they've missed or what they think they've missed in terms of their basic learning, their basic education, that they think, you know, there are big gaps. A few of them admitted to me today, which is not a news flash, that, you know, I didn't do all the homework you set during COVID, oh really, that's not a newsflash. I knew that, that's okay. But they're now worried about the fact that I didn't maybe do work for 2 or 3 months, and what does that mean now, and what have I missed out on? Or if they're older age groups as well, that they didn't have to do the same exams as everybody else did. And is there going to be that stigma attached to us as the COVID years, that we just got given our grades and we didn't have to work the same way? So there's that side of it, missing out on different things. But there's the other side, which is lovely, is just to quote one of my pupils from today, was, you know, school doesn't feel like a prison anymore. It feels like community again. And I got actually really emotional when they said that, because it really, as a member of staff, it did feel like an alien environment to me while we were going through all of that. It didn't feel the way school should feel and what the way I want school to feel as a teacher. And it was lovely to hear them saying it feels like community again, that we're back together again, and we're interacting with our teachers properly, and we're getting taught everything again that we haven't always got taught this last couple of years. Talking about the fact that, you know, we couldn't do practicals, we didn't have normal PE, we couldn't go on field trips, we couldn't get on a bus with our rugby mates, all those things that were there interacting with us as staff and with other year groups. They've really missed out on that, and they're just thriving on the fact that that's all back again, you know. So there's those two sides.
So there's a lot of really positive things there. Are you seeing greater levels of pastoral need or anxiety or any of those kinds of things as a reverse of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big things was that the first time through, when we were doing the centre assessed grades, that it was, we had to look back at all their assessment throughout the year, and that everything counted towards what their grades looked like. And now there's just this anxiety over every single test that they take. Every single test, they just think this matters. Everything hangs on the balance of doing this test. And I try to emphasize all the time that we've always done these tests. Like your big brother did these tests 5 years ago. They're not any different to what happened, but now it's their perception of them. You know, they always have mattered, but they didn't really matter to the kids as much as they maybe matter to us as the staff, you know. So there's a lot of anxiety about the fact that there's so much pressure on every test, every piece of controlled assessment they do at GCSE. They just think that this is the big one. Everything is the big one. There's no getting them down from that sometimes as well. And I definitely see in my own form class, I have a year 12 form class, and, you know, there is anxiety in my form class. And it as Caroline was saying, you know, it looks different for every single pupil. Some of them will come to me and be very vocal about that, and some will not want to speak to me about it, but be quite, you know, uptight. And you can tell that they're very uptight about it as well. So it manifests itself differently for each one of them. And that's where the relationship with them is so important, isn't it? That we know them. I know that their little quirks and the things that kind of make them tick a little bit. But we're definitely seeing more of that, unfortunately, with all the older year groups, year 11 to year 14, I would say that that's been more apparent with those groups, because they think everything hangs on the balance, you know. So there's it's so mixed, you know, like they're loving being back, but there is the other added stress and anxiety from what they have missed as well.
Okay, that's really interesting insight. Rob, you're interacting with young people in a much more informal setting than either Carol or Caroline. Are you picking up differences? Are you seeing that those positive patterns return that Carol's just described? Or are you picking up things that you think are concerning you from the young people that you know best?
I think in terms of a pattern of life that I've noticed in the last few months that is lovely to see, but also quite concerning, is that things are starting to go back to normal. And I think what's happening in front of our eyes, but we don't quite see it, is just how busy and frantic and hectic young people's lives are. And actually, whenever I get talking to some of the young people and they tell me about their week and all that they're involved in and everything that they go to and everything that's back up and running, I think if they were to sit in front of an adult with a blank bit of paper and to write it out, it would really shock the adult how much, when you think of full-time education, study commitments, after-school commitments, hobbies, lessons, friends, family stuff, and then church things on top of that. It's actually an incredibly jam-packed, busy, full-on, frantic week. And I suppose then when I'm listening to Caroline and Carol there talk about people feeling a bit anxious and stressed and really, really freaked out when it comes to exams and different things going on, that's certainly something that I think is definitely there at the minute and something that I would notice with young people.
Is that having any impact on their spiritual development or their spiritual lives? Or have you seen, what are you picking up from that side of their life?
I find it quite hard to dissect that in a way, but I can see from these patterns the potential pitfalls, because obviously if life is busy, then choices have to be made at certain times of what's important to go to. And, you know, certainly it's always been the case that when it's busy exam periods and things are full on, people disappear for a little bit and then they reemerge because life is full on with school. But now, even at times where it feels like, you know, exams aren't full on, or maybe it's just, as Carol was saying, it's something that's happening. Everything seems to be very pressurized and full on. So I suppose at times in a busy life, you have to make cuts. And there is a danger there. If the spiritual side of coming along to a youth group gets cut, then that unique aspect of exploring faith that comes from community and peers and your friends down at church, that gets lost a little bit, and it might become a little bit stop-starty. It might just become another thing that's in the list for that week, and it could very easily just get left off and forgotten about a little bit.
I really don't want this conversation to just focus on the negatives, but I think it might be important. I as a parent of a teenager will want to recognise this myself, but what do we think are the particular challenges that not maybe every single young person is facing, but what would you each recognise as being the major hurdles that you're seeing young people having to address at this time? Carol, do you want to kick off?
I think one of the things that comes through with my chats with pupils is balance, almost what you're saying there, that there's just so many pressures on them, so many ways in which they're pulled. I find it difficult balancing things in my life, and I'm an adult and I have perspective on things and all that sort of stuff. And I do not remember when I was 15 feeling that I couldn't balance my life. You know, I don't remember feeling like that, but they do. They certainly feel like, you know, there's too many plates spinning. I don't want to let anybody down. You know, I'm going to keep the GB plate spinning. I'm going to keep the workload in school spinning and all the drama that I do after school and the hockey that I do on Saturday and the youth group. You know, all that spinning all the time. And if they don't keep moving it, something's going to crash. And that really, really frightens me when I hear that. And what another comment that a pupil has made to me very recently is that there's just not time anymore. We're back to that again. And that's a 13-year-old saying that, you know, we're back to that again. And that was one of the very precious things that the last few years has given us, that rare opportunity to properly slow down, prioritise things, prioritise spending time with our children, time with our families, time with God, time on our faith, the things that, you know, putting the main things as the main things. And but now we're getting, there's too many voices again, there's too much noise, there's too much background noise. And if we as adults find that difficult to manage and navigate, you know, how much more so is a 13 or 14-year-old going to find that to navigate? And that's definitely the thing that's coming through. Of everything else, that when they talk about mental health or workload or any of those other things, it is the lack of balance that will maybe push a small mental health problem into a really big mental health problem, because, you know, they just can't see the wood for the trees. And that concerns me an awful lot when I watch my own children as well as others.
Absolutely. And it's concerning that both of you have very starkly identified that, Rob, from a church point of view, and Carol in education. Caroline, you're obviously seeing young people at a particular end of the sort of mental health spectrum. But I mean, are you seeing that tension and balance, and what's going on for them when they're feeling those stresses?
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely agree. And one of the first things we try to do is to help children and young people pace themselves a little bit. It's like, you know, when the pandemic happened, everything stopped, absolutely everything stopped, you know, and then suddenly everything started up again. But it seemed to happen quite quickly in the end, I think, and people haven't had a chance to catch their breath and adjust to suddenly having these very busy lives again. And I think, you know, if you think about kids and young people in school now, yes, they're back in school, but they're back in school feeling much more stressed than they were maybe a couple of years ago, you know, when they're doing their sports club, but they're maybe feeling a bit more stressed about sport than they were 2 years ago. It's like they're doing all of the same things, but they're actually feeling much more stressed and much more anxious about that as well. So there definitely is something about you're going back to how things were, but you're not the same. You know, there's been this whole kind of journey in between that needs to be understood. And I think to support everybody in the right way, you really have to understand their story. Like, what was their unique story through the pandemic, you know, and what is the one bit of their life that's going to be too much for them to handle right now, you know, and to try to make a difference in that one bit. I think it's having those sorts of relationships where you're able to work out, okay, look, let's look at everything you're meant to be doing this week and with how you feel this week. What bits can we take out this week and what bits do we have to do this week? And absolutely, Rob, you were saying about, you know, about spiritual lives. You can't take the spiritual bit out every week because that's another sort of, you know, unraveling that you don't want to see happen either. But I think our kids are really dependent on us to help them work out what their priorities are, and that changes day by day and week by week as well. And that's far too much to ask a young person to be able to do themselves or to be able to even recognize themselves.
So as adults, it sounds like, Caroline, you're saying that we need to listen very carefully to young people, and obviously that's a big part of your job. Rob, when you're listening to young people, what sort of challenges and frustrations and so on are they expressing to you?
I think Carol mentioned something there about letting people down. And I think in the busyness of life at the minute, there is that feeling, you know, if a young person isn't able to come along to something or attend something, there's this sense of I'm letting people down, or this is a thing that I've attended for a number of years in my life and I've built up really good relationships with people. But at the minute, life just feels like it's stopping me from going to that thing. So it's something that, you know, that sense of I'm letting folks down and I'm causing people to be upset over the heads of that. I also think, you know, I was chatting to a few young people last night, and just the pressure and the stress of exams, that was very clearly coming out when I asked them, you know, what are some of the biggest challenges you're facing at the minute? It was exams, revision, you know, and getting things done, as Carol has said there before. I suppose a big challenge in the moment is that there's something in disconnecting from life that helps us to connect with God. And if you're constantly connected and switched on and doing things, and, you know, young people are young people, they're like us, I suppose, with our phones. Any chance they get to switch off, they're switching on to their phones or something else. And, you know, maybe at the moment they might get away with that because they're young, but I wonder if that develops a habit or a way of life that as you progress into your later teens and your kind of young adult years, if there is something there about always being switched on, always doing, always going, and the idea of silence or retreat or pulling back or connecting with something more or thinking about something more, if those little elements of life in a spiritual sense get lost or harder to enter into.
So Christian parents can, even though it may be a battle with phones and media generally, to gently encourage young people to take time with God, you're kind of suggesting. Is there anything else any of you would suggest that parents can do to support young people face some of these challenges and hurdles that you've mentioned?
I think this is probably a really obvious one, but encouraging them to talk more and trying really, really hard as a parent to get your child off the device or off the mobile phone and actually engaged in proper conversation, because it's so easy for young people, but also so easy for ourselves to fill time by scrolling on our phone or our iPads or whatever that is. And the challenge is always about how do we keep that really strong relationship with our children? How do we show them that we're interested in them and we're interested in their lives and what's important to them is important to us? And how do we model biblical principles to them? How do we do anything like that? We can't if we're not able to actually sit down with them and have conversations. Or it may not be sitting down because that doesn't tend to work so well, but going out for a walk together. I think it's been really intentional about those times, because I don't think they naturally come up in between homework and checking out whatever kids want to check out online. You know, we have to be really deliberate about how we engage them in conversation with us, really open conversation with us.
Yeah, I think that idea of communicating and having things that facilitate that in your life is so, so vital. And I suppose for us as a family, something that's a bit of a non-negotiable is that we have dinner at the table every night together. Now, as you mentioned, my kids are primary school kids. And so while I taxi them about a good bit, it's not as crazy as having teenagers. But that once a day we come together at some point, we eat a meal together. And if, as a youth worker, if I know anything about young people, it's that food is the key to discussion. And so that at the table together, talking about our day, I think that's really, really important. And maybe for parents, it's saying, OK, is there one day a week, if life is just too busy and we can't do that, is there one day a week where we can say that's a non-negotiable, we will have this meal together, or we will go for that walk together, or we'll do this thing that kind of facilitates an opportunity just to have a chat and to touch base. And that might be to share a wee bit about faith, it might be to talk about school, it might be to chat about whatever it is, but it just creates that opportunity for a conversation, and who knows what could come from that.
That's really, really helpful. Carol, I'm down to ask you, parents have very formal parent-teacher, well, we maybe haven't even resumed those the way we would, but if you could just encourage parents one way that they could support their teenage kids educationally, what would you want to encourage parents in that as they face those challenges?
I think one of the big things that comes through is the importance of routine, even at home. When parents are asking me about, you know, how do I help them when they're at home, I have no idea about physics or chemistry or French. And you don't need to, because I don't either, because I don't teach any of those things. So I'm certainly not going to be an expert with my own child. But I think just establishing good routines, even starting at the dinner table, like Rob's saying, you know, that you have those conversations. So I have a teenager and I have a very nearly 10-year-old, which is very important. We play Hilo Rhino at the dinner table every night. So we talk about best part of our day, worst part of our day. And we talk about something weird that happened that day and maybe how God maybe moved in the day. That's a really important routine in our house. So I completely agree with that. I think that's a really important way to start an evening. And then after that, what is expected of them, that they go and do their homework and we help them. So my husband and I, we split those tasks. He takes the sciences and I take the arts, and we kind of just support. We don't answer their homeworks for them. We don't do any of that, but we are there. We'll read over things with them. Some of our pupils say that, you know, Mum just chats me through the textbook, and she doesn't even understand the textbook, but she just chats me through the textbook. And isn't that lovely that he does? Like, that's a 16-year-old in my own school saying that. Like, you know, my mum just chats me through the textbook and I chat her back, you know, and I'm almost teaching her, and that's lovely. So we have those routines at home, that's what happens. And then clubs and societies and all those other things obviously happen on top of that as well. But we have routines for the week, and we have routines for the early part of the evening before a crazy busy night of whatever else happens. I think you doing that is really, really important as a parent, because that's what I get from pupils, is that I don't know how to organise myself. You know, I'm not good at time management. You know, I have a 16-year-old who is not good at time management. Love him as much as I do. He just, you know, will speak to me on a Sunday about a deadline he has on Monday. And you just think, what? So, you know, we're the adults, and that's where our role comes in, you know, that we can help them with those things that they find very difficult to do. And I was probably not very good at it when I was a teenager either. But all those routines are really, really important, because that's where a lot of pupils really struggled during COVID and lockdown, was the lack of routine. It was lovely for a little while, the great weather and no routine and all of that. That was wonderful. It was like being on the summer holidays, but much earlier. But actually the realisation of the lack of routine means we don't do things, we don't get stuff done. And all sorts of different parts of our lives suffer. Our physical health, our mental health, and our spiritual health all suffer if we're not in a good routine and taking time out, Sabbath time. All of those things, all those routines are really, really important in our lives. And I think that's a big thing that I always say to parents anyway.
I think that is really important, because we've talked about busyness, but that's one way to put boundaries around that. But yet there are things opening up, and it was great to hear some of the young people in the Vox Pops talk about things that they were excited about. And there might be conflicting things there, because we think, oh, you've already enough in your life, or you can see that maybe their confidence isn't quite what it was in terms of wanting to take on those things. So in terms of the opportunities that each of you see young people have opening up for them, how would you encourage parents to, in a healthy way, in the way that you've sort of been describing, to embrace those opportunities? Because we don't want just to see life is full of challenges and difficulties, but actually to embrace the good things that God is putting into their lives. What would any of you say to parents about just helping them take on those things?
I think probably it's trying to help them make good decisions about those things. You know, there's lots and lots of opportunities out there. Like you've just said, you know, lots of things are restarting. You know, Duke of Edinburgh's back, all these different courses that they can do. The 16-year-olds are dying to get a job, but the 17-year-olds are dying to learn how to drive. All those coming of age things are all kind of back that have been probably pushed to the side a little bit. But I do think we need to help them prioritise that a little bit. We certainly have those conversations in our house as to what's the value in each of those things, what's maybe going to not happen this week or this season of life, that if you're going to take on that new thing, because you can't do everything and neither should you do everything, but to try and be excited with them as well about those big marker moments. You know, so we had a 16th birthday at the weekend. You know, that was a big marker moment, and of course we had a lot of time celebrating as a family and doing things together and time with friends, and that's really important. You know, helping them prioritize all the other things. Do you do Duke of Edinburgh this year, or is that really a priority this year? Is that something that you're going to really gain something from? Are you going to be pushed on in your faith, or just you learn new skills? Are those things going to help you? But I do think that that's probably my role as a parent, and then probably as a teacher as well, to have those slightly removed conversations as a support act to the parents in school, of helping them make those decisions about, well, what do you really need to be doing here? You don't need to be doing 25 things every week. That's just ridiculous. You know, try and help them prioritize that.
But some of them are very driven to do lots and lots of things. And it's really good to hear a teacher recognize the rounded opportunities that are there, it's hard. Rob, are you seeing young people just throwing themselves into all those opportunities, or do you think that they're maybe more reluctant than maybe they were previously? What sort of things do you see opening up for them?
I think it's a little bit split. When you take the crowd who are maybe 15 and below, they're very involved, they're very connected, they're in and amongst things, and they're a part of it all, and they're really chomping at the bit to be involved in things. They're actually a very, very confident group of young people, and I don't know if it's my particular crowd, but they're very much engaged, inquisitive, and want to be involved in it. The guys who are a wee bit older than that, I think the period of lockdown, of not being connected to community, of coming out of that a little bit older, of getting part-time jobs, of doing difficult exams and thinking about university, that's the crowd that in recent years maybe has, we've been able to keep them connected and develop a different kind of relationship with someone as they're reaching into adulthood, whereas that's been much more difficult because I think of their experience of being disconnected from church, but also then once getting back into everyday life, it's just been a wee bit more difficult for them.
How would you encourage those older ones to, particularly, let's face it, keep involved in church and their faith, but also some of the balance that we've been talking about? What would you be wanting to do for them?
Well, something I always talk to our slightly older teens, and I kind of share with them, is that the youth ministry lights, they switch off at a point, and you don't come along to these things anymore, and you don't have that kind of community or those kind of, you know, those friends. You still have friends, but do you know what I mean? And I suppose when you're thinking about friends throughout that, I always encourage them to think about family and how church can provide that. and the importance of Sunday, the importance of, even if life is busy and full on, that Sunday is something that you commit to. And you don't just commit to it because your family goes or your friends go, but that as you step into the building, you're part of that family and you have value and worth, and you have people who are a lot older than you who genuinely care for you and love you. And when they come over to speak to you, they do that in a genuine way. And not only is their presence to you really important, but your presence to them at church is really, really important. And so I always encourage them to think about, what does family look like in church when you're 20, 25, 30? And if it's about coming down to youth group with all your friends who are the same age, it's going to be quite tricky for you. But if you're coming in thinking, there are people below me a few years younger that I can invest in, and there's a people above me who I can look up to and have as a positive role model and someone who can speak into my life, and you begin to view church as family and you're an important part of that, I think that can be a really, really good thing.
That's a very positive approach and a very positive encouragement, and I think that will be helpful. And obviously parents may try that, but to have somebody like you and other leaders and other members of the church encouraging people positively, I think would be great.
There's maybe a risk in that where you say, look, life is busy, but you still come along to these three or four or five things during the week.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden you just push someone out the door. And sure. I think it's trying to find that balance between recognizing the busyness of life and everything that people have on, but still trying to understand how people could connect. And I think that's something I understand as a youth worker, but I'm sure parents of teenagers really understand that fine balance between saying, look, this is something we do and you should be a part of it, but at the same time trying, you know, not kind of pushing it to the point where their kids think, look, not for me anymore.
I'm conscious, though, there may be some parents listening to this who are realizing that their young people, their issue is one of confidence and, you know, not wanting to step up. Caroline, you know, from your background in psychology, how would you encourage parents who, it's not that they're doing too much, but they just can't, you know, have it within themselves to take some of those opportunities? What would you say to them?
Yes, because that's what I was thinking about, actually, was that, you know, it's great that all these opportunities have opened up again, and it is amazing. I wish I was a young person now and could partake in just all these amazing things that are around. But I think quite often what you can see is an avoidance, or some young people avoiding them because they just don't feel like they can, or because they don't have the confidence, or they just don't believe that this could be something that will work out well for them. And I think with that, it's really important to talk that through, that actually avoidance can be a real slippery slope as well when it comes to feeling uncomfortable or feeling anxious or feeling apprehensive. And I think as parents, we can almost normalize the struggle. We can normalize, you know, how anxious certain things can make us feel, certainly new things or things around people that we don't know well. And that's all about how we talk about our own experiences too. I think, you know, if you can, within your family where possible, make it normal to talk about the things that are difficult or the things that you maybe had to push yourself to do today even though you weren't really feeling like it, or talking through conflict you maybe had with someone during the day, or something that you're apprehensive about at the weekend. That's all the kind of normal stuff of life, isn't it? And I think sometimes maybe sometimes as parents we try to protect our kids too much from that, because we want to convey the image that we're, you know, well held together, and that, you know, we know how to manage everything. But that's not the reality of life. Life is messy, life is difficult. And so we do think there's something about being able to sit with your child and say, I would feel maybe apprehensive about doing this as well, or I can appreciate that you maybe are in this mindset where part of you really wants to try this new thing, but part of you really isn't sure. Let's talk about that, or let's give it a try, or can I offer you support, or can somebody else offer you support so that you can give it a go? I think what we don't want to do is allow a young person or a child to avoid too many things, because I don't think that will ever get any easier. It's more about how can we support them to be brave in that, in the same way that maybe we as adults have to be brave, you know, on a day-to-day basis as well. but making it all very normal.
It's funny how often the three of you have talked about the value of good conversation. And there's an organisation, Christian organisation called Axis, and they have a programme called One Conversation for Parents, and based around this teenage girl who said, oh, I've only ever had one conversation with my dad. And they were like, oh, goodness, you know, we know your family. That's really depressing. And then she finished her sentence and she said, and it's still going on. And it was how, you know, with children or some of the adults, you can sit down and have one long conversation. With teenagers, it's like a little bit here and a little bit there. And I think you've each talked about the value of trying to keep those lines of communication open with your teenage children. Just before our time runs out, I would love each of you to sort of encourage parents of teenagers to say, what other things can they do? What sort of steps can they be focusing on that will just help them to be supportive and enabling parents to teenagers at this time? Who would like to?
Can I just pop in, yeah, there maybe and just say one thing that we haven't really talked maybe quite so much is about the fact that as a parent, you need to be in the right frame of mind yourself. Mm. You need to look after yourself as well. And you know, that whole idea of fitting your own oxygen mask before you try to fit the mask of your child.
Yes.
You know, if we're not in a good place ourselves as parents, whether that's physically, emotionally, spiritually, it's going to make our job of supporting our kids so much harder. So when we think about routine and we think about the rhythm of day-to-day life, it's something to think about for ourselves as adults so that we can then be a better or a good enough parent for our young people. Because I think we very easily forget that part, that, you know, we don't have endless energy. Of course, we're going to make mistakes. We need to make sure that we look after ourselves and that we have supports around ourselves as well to help us be a better parent.
That's very helpful. What else would you encourage parents, Carol?
One of the things that I encourage parents to do is that spending time with your kids, but in a challenging or you know, like activities scenario, that you're doing stuff together, actually doing something. So even if it is a small thing, like going out for a walk, or it could be something much more challenging. So my husband and I have just taken up tomahawk throwing together.
Oh,
so
my word.
But we have taught our children how to do it.
Not at the children, Carol. This is, just to be clear.
But we do that with young people. So we're helping the young people, but we've done it with our own kids. And it's a really good stress reliever for all of us together. And it's really great fun. But those sorts of things, that's a real challenge, you know, trying to do that together and laughing about together and feeling together and just that shared experience. Those shared experiences are just so important for young people, for ourselves as well. It's really good for our own mental health as well as our children's mental health. But those sorts of moments, then just I get to know my children so much better through that. It opens up conversations later on in the week. And even from a youth work point of view as well, those shared experiences, I help out in lots of different youth organisations, and shared experiences where you're facing a challenge together is just so important for relationship building, for people's mental health, for community building, all of that. I just think if families can do that together, or even one parent with one child, you know, that is just such a vital building block in terms of what that can launch you into with your family going forward.
Rob, what about you? Any encouragement to parents?
Yeah, Graham, I think, you know, practically things that parents can put in place. For me, I have a few things that I try to do or to implement as a parent at home, and this could apply to anybody. One is that faith is present at home, that the things that we're involved in as a family when it comes to church and the different organisations and youth programmes that my kids go to, that doesn't become a separate thing that we do when we're there, and then at home that's never really on the agenda or on the table in our family life. And so thinking of ways that naturally and ways that aren't forced, that faith is something that's shared, where stories are shared, and maybe even examples and times from my own life that might connect with my kids and what they're going through, or how my faith would see me through in a certain circumstance that they might be facing, if that's they're worried about something or they're struggling with a friendship. So I think having faith as a as a present thing in our family life would be a really important thing to think about. The other is to see patience as a key thing to have. You know, for me, my wife's always telling me that I need to listen more than I speak. And at times I just want to speak and say and have the right answer. But I think with teenagers, as they develop and they go through life and they go through different ups and downs and exploring faith and church and all of that, I think it's really important to have patience as something that we really hold on to. And by that, I mean listening well and asking good questions and trying to understand what our teens are going through. Speaking when we have the opportunity and sharing what we believe on something and taking those moments when they come to speak into our children's lives. And then, as people have been saying tonight, to try to walk alongside through all the ups and downs and through all the moments, to be a constant, to be a presence, and to just be there in a way that's filled with patience. And then the final thing that I'm always challenged with as a parent is just to pray for my kids, and to not just get caught up in trying to get through life or to get things done, or just to support them as children and all the things that they do, and to see that as my immediate thing, but to be bathing all of that in prayer, praying as I go, and praying in the moment, but also taking time to maybe go for a walk and to think about who they are as people, the friendships they have, the struggles and the successes that they go through, their own experiences of faith and their own kind of experience of church and all of that, and just to be bringing that before God and praying for them. So yeah, having faith that's present at home, having a posture of patience, and then and looking to continually be praying for our kids would be three practical things I would suggest.
And pray with them, Rob, would you say too? Because I think often... You know, with my kids, sometimes I don't know what to say. I just give them a hug and just say a short prayer with them and remind them this is in God's hands. And I think often as a parent, that's the ultimate thing we do, is to recognize that their Heavenly Father is the one who's looking after them. But that's very challenging. Any other last things you want, any of you want to say, just to encourage parents? And because one thing that strikes me is that we're all part of the family of God, and there's people, Christian teachers, youth workers, Christian people working in all walks of life, people in our congregations who are part of our young people's lives. But parents don't step back when they reach this stage. And I certainly want to encourage parents of teenagers. Your role may have changed a little bit, but it's you know, just as important. Any last words of encouragement from any of you?
I think one thing that's come through very clearly to me over the last little while is that our young people want to talk to us. They want to have those conversations. They are actually crying out for it a lot of the time. Like one of my pupils had said to that we need you to talk to us because we need your guidance. We need you to tell us sometimes just what to do and what not to do, and please talk to us. And I think just to remember that is the case. Like sometimes I think as adults, we think teenagers don't want to speak to us. You know, I'm their mom or I'm their dad or I'm a figure of authority, and that we're the last person they want to speak to, when actually that is not the case at all. And if we've got good relationships with them, they will want to open up to us. Eventually, sometimes it might take a bit longer than others, depending on the scenario. So I think just be encouraged by that and to be patient with your conversations with them, that it will come good. You know, you'll get the conversation that you need with them eventually, and you'll be able to guide them. So yes, they do want you in their lives, and they really do want to hear from you, and they want to know that you love them. And I think I tell my kids in school that your parents love you. They want the best for you. Believe me when I say that. Don't ever forget it, you know.
Yeah, it's not really about the words that you use. Sure, it's not. It's about that relationship, like you say, Carl. I think sometimes people worry they're not going to say the right thing, or they don't know how to approach the subject right, or even how to engage with somebody. And I think you can't go wrong with that. If you're conveying that you're trying and you're interested and you care about them, you can't go wrong, you know. And that idea of rupture and repair, you know, relationship is strengthened when you don't get things right, as long as you're able to say, oh, I'm sorry, I really didn't get that right, did I? Can we try again? Can we start again? And that's as true for any relationship, but certainly in parenting as well, is, you know, your child will always understand when you come to them with honesty and say, I really maybe totally messed that up, but I still want to know and I still want to understand, and you try for better the next time. You know, you can't go wrong, I think, if you convey that you love them and you really do want to understand. It just might take a good few goes at it before you get there together. It is that journey, isn't it? It's the ups and downs, and you'll get there in the end with it, as long as they know that you're for them, you're completely on their side.
I so appreciate the perspective that each of you has brought to this conversation, and I'm sure that any parent of a teenager, in fact anyone who cares for young people, will have been deeply encouraged by this conversation. We often feel as parents that we're not doing a good enough job, and yet this, I think, has reminded us that we just need to stick with our young people, to pray for and with them, to encourage them, and to have that one long conversation that is spread over their entire lives. So thank you to you, Rob, to Carol, to Caroline, for being part of this conversation. And thank you to each of you for listening in. We pray that it will have been encouragement to you, and that you will be inspired to keep going. Thank you for listening, and until the next time, goodbye.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Thanks for joining us.